This is a Hawley Baptist Church podcast, bringing you into a community in which everyone is welcome, lives are changing, and Jesus is King. Thanks for listening with us today. We would invite you to subscribe so you can keep up to date with us. But for now, we pray you enjoy listening for what God has in store for you in this episode, and that it helps change your life for the better, in Jesus' name. Enjoy.
Hello, hello.
Good morning. Hi, I'm Phil.
I'm Richard.
Excellent. And we're your hosts this morning at HBC's live service. So lovely that you've joined us. You've obviously recovered after the penalty shootout yesterday. Did you watch it?
It was, oh, yes. Nail biting.
Oh, well, yeah, it's watching England is generally nail biting, but there you go. That's it, yeah. So welcome. Now, this morning is good. We're starting a new series this morning on the book of Ruth. Don't know if you're familiar with that. It's in the Old Testament. And I don't know about you, but I often feel life is a bit fast-paced and it's a bit uncertain. I think, you know, we've been talking about that and various new governments have been talking about that, haven't they? And sometimes it's hard to find purpose and hope when things change and move so quickly and when you encounter difficulties. And the story of Ruth from the Old Testament is all about that. It's about resilience and loyalty and finding purpose and hope when things don't always go the way you'd hoped. So this series is going to explore some of those themes and how you respond to that in a healthy way. So we're looking forward to that. There's a little intro to the series, so we thought we'd give you that at the front end. So have a look at this.
In today's fast-paced and uncertain world, finding hope and purpose can be challenging. But the story of Ruth from the Bible offers timeless lessons on resilience, loyalty, and direction in tough times. Join us for this sermon series as we explore how Ruth's journey addresses loss, identity, provision, and renewal. Discover practical steps to find renewed hope and purpose. Don't miss this opportunity to find strength and inspiration. Finding hope. Navigating life's challenges.
There you go. Okay, so a lovely story. It's a story about loyalty. It's a story about trusting. It's a story about reaching out for help when things get more than a little interesting. And I think it's Martin this morning, isn't it? I think Martin's preaching.
Yep.
So I think Martin's preaching this morning on that. And if you're going through a tough time, listen in and see if some of these words of wisdom from thousands of years ago help you. Okay, we're going to go downstairs and join them in the live stream.
Well, good morning. Lovely to see your faces this morning. I hope you are doing well. Hi to those online who are watching. I hope you've had a good time with the other guys upstairs. So we are starting a new sermon series, Finding Hope, Navigating Life's Challenges. And we are going to be looking at a book in the Bible called Ruth. And I'm hoping I'm not going to give the game away, but it's about a lady called Ruth. But this morning, we're not going to be looking so much at Ruth. We're going to be looking at a lady called Naomi. We'll come to that in a moment. I don't know about you, but I'm a bit of a fan of a show on the BBC called The Repair Shop. Very enthusiastic people over there. For those of you who don't know what The Repair Shop is, basically, it's a show where people take possessions, family heirlooms that are maybe in a state of disrepair, and they've usually got some sort of sob story attached to them, and they tend to a panel of experts who fix them and restore them to their former glory. And I think it's amazing. I love anything involving your hands and crafts and things. I was a design tech teacher, so I like all that stuff. But what I like is not so much the items, but the transformation. And they bring them in pieces and they go and collect it. They reveal it and it's like, wow, it looks absolutely amazing. That's what I love most about it. And I think the one that I'm impressed by the most is a ceramics expert. I think her name is Kirsten, but I can't remember. And I think probably all of you have broken something which is like a mug or a bowl, and you have attempted to fix it. Put your hand up if you have tried to fix something that you have broken. Yes, there's quite a few of you. I remember when I was a teenager, I was home from uni, and I don't ask how it happened, but I dropped a kilogram weight on my parents' bathroom sink and knocked the whole front off it. I managed to fix it and actually managed to keep it going for the next few years. But if you've attempted to do this, you can never get it to fit quite right. The pieces never go back together. And there's always cracks visible. But Kirsten on the repair shop can get it absolutely perfect. And she paints it all in. And you cannot see where that crack once was. See, wouldn't it be great if we could do that with life? That when we are struggling, when we are broken, maybe our life has fallen to pieces, we can go to somewhere like the repair shop and they can fix it so it's back to how it was. All the cracks are gone. You wouldn't know there was an issue there at all. Wouldn't that be amazing? So the story of Ruth that we're going to be looking at over the month of July, these four Sundays, is a story about someone who finds hope and purpose in the aftermath of pain and loss. And I don't know, but maybe that's your story this morning. And if that is, I pray that this morning and this month, as you listen to these words from the book of Ruth, you will find comfort and hope, and perhaps a renewed sense of purpose. So, if you've got a Bible, you might want to turn to Ruth chapter 1. It's in the Old Testament. It's next to a book called Judges. We'll come to that in a moment. The word that will appear on the screen. In fact, here we go, is Ruth chapter 1. And we're just going to read through the story. We're going to read through the whole of chapter 1, find out what the story is, and it's about as simple as that, really. So here we go. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. Now, what does it mean by that? When the judges ruled, there was a time, so the nation of Israel had been promised, they'd been slaves in a place called Egypt. You've probably heard of that. They were rescued by God and a guy called Moses, and they were promised a land of their own. They had got to the promised land. There'd been loads of battles and fights, but it was a pretty chaotic time. And they didn't have a king. Their king was supposed to be God. But every now and then, if there was a national crisis, they raised up someone called a judge who was there to lead that nation out of trouble and rescue them. But it was a chaotic time. We did a series on this a couple of years ago called Game of Thrones. So if you are interested in finding more about this time of chaos and rubbishness and horribleness, if that's a word, you can go back and watch on YouTube the Game of Thrones series. But unsurprisingly, because they weren't in a particularly great place, famine had a big effect on them. And there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live for a while in the country of Moab. As an indication that maybe they weren't doing a permanent move here, they just thought, let's just go and go somewhere else, sit out this famine, and maybe once it's over, we could come back again. The man's name was Elimelech. His wife's name was Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem, Judah. Ephrathites was just kind of an old family who lived in Bethlehem for a long time, maybe a bit of aristocracy there, but they were well known. There was family that had been in Bethlehem for a long, long time. And they went to Moab and lived there. I don't know if any of you have moved away from home. I remember when I went to go and my daughter starts high school in September, and we went to the local high school, and we could hear people going around, parents going around the school saying, oh, that's my classroom. Oh, I remember that teacher. For me, that's not the case because I come from Ipswich, but maybe some of you have always lived in Hawley. But if you haven't and you've moved away, you maybe can sense the feeling of maybe excitement of going somewhere new, and everything's okay as long as life is okay. But as soon as life gets hard, you suddenly realize you haven't got that support network that you would have at home. And that's exactly what happens with Naomi. Now, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, which is not a surprise, really. There wasn't any other sort of women around. One named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they'd lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and her husbands. Imagine how life would have been like for Naomi. Her world would have collapsed. It would have been a gradual build-up over time of heartache, disappointment, and despair. But what she discovered, that for her, there was no future security in Moab. See, in the Bible, in the nation of Israel, they allowed for women who had lost their husbands if they were widows. They were there to be supported, particularly by a male relative, because they had nowhere supporting themselves at those times. They couldn't go off and get a job. They were basically penniless and destitute. And the problem with Naomi living in Moab, she didn't have any male relatives around. There was no security for her in Moab. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of his people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. So the famine's over, they sort of decide to head back to Bethlehem. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. So my question is, why are the daughter-in-laws going? Well, we'll come to that in a minute, but at least they're doing something. Sometimes when life is falling apart, when you don't know what's going on, the future looks bleak, maybe you just can't see the light at the end of the tunnel, sometimes you just have to do something. And for Naomi, it was just, I'm going to go home to the people that I once knew, where maybe I can have a sense of security and a reality of security. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-laws, go back, each of you to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband. Then she kissed them and goodbye, and they wept aloud. In other words, Naomi, after setting out on this journey, probably, I don't know if she realized this before, but maybe it just came to her. This is selfish of me. I'm dragging my two daughter-in-laws along, and actually, there's nothing I can offer them. They would be far better going back home. They're still young. They can get married again. They can find security in their own relatives. But why am I dragging them off to another land? But they said to her, we will go back with you to your people. So Orpah and Ruth are like, no, we'll keep on going. Why? Why are they still going to do this? Is it out of loyalty? Is it out of excitement? Well, Naomi decides to push the matter. Because maybe they're just saying it because they feel they ought to. Have you ever felt that? Someone's just saying it because they feel they ought to, but they don't really want to. And maybe Naomi sensed that. So she said, return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I'm too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and then gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye. But Ruth clung to her. So when pushed, Orpah decides to head home, but not so with Ruth. So Naomi pushes it a little bit further. Look, said Naomi, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her. But Ruth replied, don't urge me to leave you or to return or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. And where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Ruth is willing to give up everything she knows, the religion that she was brought up in, and give herself not only to Naomi, not only to the customs of the people, but to her God as well. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me. And when Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her. As I said, the book of Ruth is about Ruth, and we're starting to see an indication of Ruth's character here. Ruth is loyal. Ruth is courageous. Ruth is stubborn. Ruth is selfless. And when she sets her mind to something, she's going to carry it through. She's, even if it means going out of her comfort zones and leaving that security behind. And as we will find as we go through this series, those attributes and that sacrifice are rewarded in the end. There is a happy ending to this story. But before we go on, I just wonder, could you be a Ruth for someone? At the beginning, I said maybe you're struggling with finding hope and purpose. Maybe life is in pieces for you. Maybe you are a Naomi at this moment, but perhaps you're not. But maybe you're a Ruth. As Naomi says, your life is not as bitter as mine. There's still hope for you. But the best and most amazing gift that Ruth could do gift she could give to Naomi was to journey with her, to be with her. She had maybe not a full sense of what Naomi was going through, but she had an understanding. Her husband had died as well. And she decides to support Naomi through those difficulties. And maybe that's something you can do. Maybe you have faced difficulties in your life. Maybe it's like Naomi, where a spouse has died. Or maybe it's through divorce or a loss of a child or a loss of a job. Or there's so many things, unfortunately, that can go wrong in life. And maybe you've been there, you've done that, and you've come out the other side. And you are the person best placed, whether you messed up in the past or if it was of no fault of your own, you are perhaps in the best place to help someone like Naomi. And the greatest gift you can offer someone who is struggling at this moment to put their life back together is to journey with them. Not give advice. Anyone could give advice. That's the quick answer. But to journey with them, just like Ruth did. So the two women went on until they came to Bethlehem. When they arrived in Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" I don't know what Naomi looked like, but those 10 years had obviously taken their toll. Every hurt, every disappointment was etched on her face, every burden visibly weighing her down. This was not the youthful, hopeful woman that had left her home 10 years previously. And this is how Naomi replies, "Don't call me Naomi," she told them. "Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter." Now, Naomi means pleasant. Mara means bitter. That's how Naomi felt about her life. She continues, "I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me." And a few verses earlier, Naomi said this, "The Lord's hand has turned against me." So Naomi still had a faith. She still believed in her gods. She still believed in the Almighty. And maybe she only believed it because it was ingrained in her. It was part of her identity, part of her worldview. But she had a belief, despite everything, that God is sovereign. God is in charge. That nothing happens without his say-so. And really, that's the theme of the whole book of Ruth. In fact, it's the whole theme of pretty much the whole Bible. But rightly or wrongly, Naomi believes that those things that have happened to her have happened because God wanted them to happen. She believed in God, but she wasn't happy with God. Naomi understood, but that didn't prevent her from feeling bitter and hurt and disappointed. She felt that God had turned against her. What have I done to deserve this? Why has life turned so sour? Maybe she'd sinned. Maybe she'd done something wrong. She didn't know, but she was feeling the consequences of whatever it was. And I've spoken to many people who feel that life has gone rubbish because of something they've done or something God has done. And we don't always know why life has turned rubbish, but the reality is, and this is a nice depressing thought for this morning, that unfortunately, we don't know what's around the corner. And life can be rosy for some people and rubbish for others. One moment we might feel safe and secure, like Naomi with her husband and her two sons. Everything's going well. She feels full. She's maybe excited about that move to Moab. And next, our world has fallen apart. Like a precious pot dropped and smashed on the floor. Or my mum and dad's bathroom sink. Or maybe just, it's not one thing, it's just the pressure of many things building up over time, a gradual increase of pain and disappointment, but the result is the same. A life broken into pieces. Are you in a similar position to Naomi? You have a faith, but you're barely hanging on. It's marred, it's damaged. And maybe desperation has brought you to this place, to this point, searching for help and hope. Perhaps recapture a faith and a home that you once knew. Going back to the repair shop. People come in and they say, make it better, make it like new, fix the problems, put the pieces back together, cover up the cracks. But every now and then, the expert, the person repairing, says that's not what they're going to do. Yes, they're going to fix it. Yes, it's going to work. Yes, it's going to look amazing, but you can still see the bumps and the dents. You can still see the scuffs and the paint peeling. Because for them, the story of that object is important. Every object that goes in there has a history. And they don't want to erase that history. They don't want to make it look like it's brand new, just out of the box. They want it to look worn. They want it to look used. They want it to look like it's seen ups and downs. Fixed, yes. Working well, yes. But not as it once was. See, the Japanese have a philosophy where it treats breakage and repair as part of the history of an object rather than something to disguise. And already we've seen that trailer for Kintsugi Hope that's going to be starting in September. And Kintsugi, as it said in the video, is this idea, it's called golden repair. That's what it means. And it's a Japanese art of repairing broken pottery by mending the areas of breakage with a lacquer dusted or mixed with powdered gold, silver, or platinum. They fix the broken pots, but the breakages remain visible. But what you have is something that's more beautiful than it once was. And because of that, gold or silver or platinum is worth more than it once was. See, Ruth is a story of restoration. It's a story of repairing broken lives. It's a story of dispelling all bitterness. It's a story of creating something beautiful, but the scars remain visible. God doesn't promise to wipe away your history, but your history can be your greatest gift to someone else. And you can end up being more beautiful and more useful and more precious than you were before those breakages. So in the final verse of this chapter, It says this: so Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. That last line, the barley harvest was beginning, points to that hope that is unpacked in the rest of the story of Ruth. Hope is stirring. A plan is forming. The pieces are beginning to be put back together again. We're going to listen to just a couple of questions just to help you reflect on maybe what you feel God is saying to you this morning. And then the band are going to come up. They're going to sing some songs. There's going to be an opportunity to respond. If you want to be prayed for, there will be some people down here, some guys down here who would love to pray for you, either during the service or after the service. If you are struggling, if you are a Naomi, please don't go away from here without at least receiving some prayer. Let's listen to these songs, these questions together.
Have life experiences left you feeling full or empty? Are you feeling bitter and angry towards God? Despite your negative feelings, are you still looking to God for help?
There you go, Richard.
Yeah.
Story of Ruth.
We're back.
Yeah. Have you enjoyed that? Well, enjoyed. It's tough stuff, isn't it? You're talking about difficult seasons in life and challenges you go through and how you respond to those. But good to reflect on them because I think Jesus once said, in this life you will have trouble. Not that you're not, you know, you might, or it could possibly. He said you will. And he never told us that we'd have an easy life. Sometimes we get sold on that, don't we? You remember folks come into faith and they're told everything will be wonderful from now on sort of thing, which is not true.
Prosperity gospel in a way. Yeah.
Everything
will become good for you.
So a few questions there. What do you reckon to some of those? Have life's experiences left you feeling full or empty? So you can probably think about some of those low times, some of those challenging times in life and how they made you feel. Are you feeling bitter or angry towards God? I always think that's an interesting one. Because people
have you had times when you get angry?
I'm not a very angry. I worry about sometimes I think I ought to get angrier than I do, really. Honest. Yeah. I need an anger injection. But I don't tend to get angry, but I do end up with a bunch of questions. And I come across that all the time in my job. And I think it depends how you see life, because I think I've got to a point where I don't blame God for stuff that happens to me. The lovely thing called circumstantial theology. Have you heard of circumstantial theology?
What's that, then?
It's basically circumstantial theology is if my circumstances are good, then God must be good. And if my circumstances are bad, then God must be really bad because he's not doing anything about it. And I think that's not an uncommon situation for people to have. They view God through the lens of their circumstances.
Mm.
So if you're having a bad time, God must be an awful person.
Mm.
And I've never thought like that, I suppose.
No.
I've certainly wondered what he's playing at.
Yes, especially when bad things, what we seem bad at the time, happen.
Yeah, and we don't understand. Do we?
No.
It doesn't make sense.
And sometimes we pray for things and it doesn't go how we pray.
Yeah.
So that's a hard one.
Yeah, that's right.
Obviously, God knows. He's seen the whole picture of everyone's lives. And
But I always have this, there's always this question that crops up at work when somebody's in the cancer ward and they're saying, what have I done that God's doing this to me? Or I must have done something wrong for God to treat me like this or something. Do you ever get that said? Do you ever feel like that? Well, it must be me. I must have done something wrong for God to have. Do you ever have that?
Yeah. I've thought that before.
Yeah.
And maybe if I wasn't, you know, thinking, maybe if I was a better Christian, that maybe God wouldn't have allowed this to happen or something. Interesting.
And I think that is one thing we go through. We sort of find a reason. We sort of translate it back onto God. I think it depends how you see life, doesn't it, and how you see God. And my view is, God never promised me an easy life.
No.
And he did tell me I live in a pretty broken world. So broken stuff happens all the time. And that's not him. He's not doing that. I think that's us. I think that's our world and the way we treat each other and the way we treat our environment and the mistakes humanity is making. If anybody, I blame us and myself, but I don't blame God. I don't have a problem with God because he never promised me an easy life. All he promised me was, you're going to go through some stuff, Phil, and I'm going to be with you every step of the way. That's sort of how I view life, I suppose.
It's that turning to him, isn't it? Rather than trying to do it by yourself. And sometimes when, for me, like, you know, I might feel a bit down because of life and things aren't going the way I'm thinking they should do. And then over time, and it's happened a few times, I think, why am I feeling like this? And it quite often I think, oh, have I been reading my Bible? Have I been praying to God?
Yeah.
And I haven't. So now when I start feeling that way, I'm thinking, right, let's go to God.
Because
that, you know, gets your mind focused and God reveals things to you.
Yeah.
Rather than just moping.
Yeah. Because I think if we blame God for everything, that he's going to be the last person I'm going to go to then, isn't he? If he's doing it to me, why would I get close to him? Whereas I don't think God operates like that. I don't think God is up there sort of whacking people at general points just to, you know, make his point or to. I don't think that's who he is. I think we're in this broken world and we're all in it together. And some people say, why me? I say, why not me? Why do I get a free pass? Why should I get preferential treatment when other good people don't?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, why not me? Why am I protected from the stuff that happens? It's all about suffering, isn't it? And how you cope with suffering and how you deal with
people
it.
People cope differently, don't they?
Yeah, some lovely stuff on there. Thanks for the chat, by the way, folks. Have left a few things on the chat. And one of them, Michelle, talks about actually the tough stuff in my life has made me who I am. I was having a chat with, I do some counselling, so I have a supervisor who looks after me as a counsellor, and he reminded me of the day. He said, Phil, don't forget that roses grow on dung heaps. And he's so right.
They grow well on dung heaps.
They grow really well.
Yeah.
And that's the weird thing, isn't it, that suffering can produce something beautiful. And I've never understood it. I wish it wasn't true.
I can think that in my life, actually, interestingly, because I've been through in various jobs I've been in with some very tough situations, conflict and things like that. And actually, I can see how it's prepared me to be able to speak to people. I haven't got that fear where I can talk to people on the streets and things like that about God. But before, if I hadn't have had those incidences, it wouldn't have prepared me. So I can see how, you know, over lots of years, God has helped me in that way and in other things as well.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah. How we grow often when it's tough. And my experience is I don't grow hugely when it's easy. When my life is easy, I don't tend to develop new characteristics and new, you know.
No, you just kind of almost stay at that level, don't you?
Yeah.
You don't. It was interesting, Mike talked about just taking that step, wasn't it? Which Ruth, I mean, amazingly, she took the step to help Naomi. And I think sometimes in these situations, you just kind of have to make a step, just do something, isn't it? Rather than just stay in that.
Rather than retreat and back off.
Yes, as you say.
It's that idea of actually having a faith, a bit like this whole series is about having that there is a new day coming, have some purpose and some hope, and just put one foot in front of the other. And sometimes that's all you need to do, just put one foot in front of the other. Because tomorrow is a new day and you never know what's coming. I've found that whenever I've gone through difficulties, weirdly, I've seen roses grow out of some really crappy situations. Yeah. And it's amazing, really. But it doesn't feel like it at the time. Yeah, you have all sorts of questions, and that's okay. It's all right to ask God. I think he'd rather you be honest than be polite. Don't know about you, but my kids, I don't want my kids to be polite with me. Hello, Dad, everything's fine. It's lovely. Thank you very much. Mm. I don't want that. I want them to tell me what they're really thinking and feeling. And our Father is the same, I think. So when you're going through it, be honest with him and reach out to people around you. Don't do it on your own. Don't do it on your own. And don't blame God. I think we make enough of our own problems, and the world does. And I'm not sure he's orchestrating all that sort of stuff. That's not the image of God I have. I think he's bigger and better and gooder than that. Yeah. Okay. Now, if you've got any questions, and you might have all sorts of questions, don't forget you can email in gotquestions@hawleybaptist.org.uk. Drop us a line and we'd love to respond to that.
That was today's episode of Hawley Baptist Church Podcast. We hope it's prompted you to want to follow Jesus, hopefully a lot, but even just a little bit more closely. If you have any questions about what you've heard in today's episode, or you want to know more about what it means to follow Jesus, you can email us, gotquestions@hawleybaptist.org.uk. We'd love to hear from you. It would really make our day. If you want to hear more from us, just a reminder, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and you can download the Hawley Baptist Church app from the Apple App Store or Google Play to hear it as well. Simply search Hawley Baptist Church. Thank you again for listening to Hawley Baptist Church Podcast. We pray God will bless you, and we'll see you next time.